Good morning. Today is Thursday, Flag Day 2018. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County District Attorney Maggie Fleming.
Good morning, Ryan.
We've got, I don't know if you've heard about our new book yet, but instead of quotes, we kind of, it's an
cliches?
Opportunity to, well, and words.
Okay.
And words. Rexy yesterday got A1, and Tony on Tuesday was the first one, and he understood what a back meant. So going alphabetical order, because otherwise I get way too confused. So this is our learning moment.
Thank you.
It's kind of like romper room, remember? Right? The old days? Yeah.
Yes.
Good. I'm glad you remember that one, too. What do you mean? So the next word, abacus. Where do we get the name abacus for the counting device used by Chinese and others? Any idea?
None.
All right. The device takes its name from the ancient Phoenician word abac, meaning dust, because the mathematicians of the day used to cover tables with dust in order to draw their diagrams and figure out their problems.
Wow.
You imagine trying to do the budget that way?
Yes.
It'd be a big old table, wouldn't it?
I'm ready.
All right, I'll get you some tablecloth and we'll go from there. Oh, my, oh, my. So, any surprises for you statewide with the election outcomes? You know, we had the judge recalled, which is a little bit different than normal. We had a judicial race here.
Yes.
Any surprises, any takeaways for you with that, or just kind of interesting and move on?
No, I didn't have any surprises. I guess, though, I will continue to be surprised at low voter turnout, particularly because it seemed to me that members of the community here and throughout California really said a lot about, you know, changing that after 2016. So I really expected a much higher voter turnout.
Wasn't that a goofy ballot?
Yes, it was too long.
Which of the 38 candidates for governor do you want to vote for?
Yeah. That makes it tough.
I do like the phrase jungle election or jungle primary.
Right.
Yeah, I thought that more than anything, that really speaks to my core. I guess San Francisco, I keep regaling people with our little couple days away, but San Francisco County had a much higher turnout, 50%-ish.
Wow. Oh, wow.
But they had the mayor position up, and they also had a anti-vaping ordinance. And I still go back when we had the most response we've ever had to our question of the day was when the county was contemplating allowing smoking or not allowing smoking inside the buildings.
Right.
And I think we had over 5,000 responses. I mean, it was almost the maximum. And it came out almost 50-50. So there was certainly passions on both sides. So I think if you have a race where there's some emotional component to it, people turn out. But it's the, okay, voting for the water board and the school board member.
Well, it also depends,
by and large,
do those people who are there for that single issue then also vote on candidates? Because you see that even locally. Sometimes, you know, there's people are really all in on certain races and then they don't bother.
What about me?
They don't bother to vote on others.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Well, how was your percentage? Not against nobody, but...
Well, I think this community, I think, does care locally. So I think that
across the board, if you're there, you're going to vote.
Exactly. Yeah. I think we see a much higher percentage of people who vote on every issue, every candidate. I'm just saying statewide, you see that where you have really high return number, certain issues or certain candidates, and then it drops way off.
Now, for me, that can also be a positive.
Yes.
There are some of the state propositions or judicial candidates or, you know, some of those things. I have no idea. I really have no clue, and probably because I have no interest in taking the time to find out. So rather than voting incorrectly, I'll let those who are passionate about it vote, and I won't vote all the way, all the time for the entire ballot. Just because I don't, you know, if I'm ignorant on it, I shouldn't vote. But I also kind of project that on others. If you don't know the individuals in this race or the situation in this race, you shouldn't be voting on that one either.
Right. I think this community is really fortunate, in part by its size, but also, and I'm active with League of Women Voters, so I'm sure I'm supposed to disclose that before I say this, but
nah.
I think we have a really good active league who runs. They run a lot of debates. They moderate for the issues. And so it's really pretty easy. And I really appreciated that. When I first moved here in January, the election was coming up. And literally, Office of Ed, we went and sat. There was a debate there and throughout the community. And that was something that I really noticed. When I lived and worked in Contra Costa, you tend to really know local candidates, you know the judges. And then because I couldn't afford to buy a house there, I bought a house in another county and commuted to work. I got a ballot, and I literally, there was no way for me to find out about the candidates because there were no forums. It was pretty shocking because I felt perhaps I shouldn't be voting. I'm not informed.
Kind of disconnect a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's why we have so many rubber chicken farms around here. So you have so many of those debates all over the place.
You're at all of them.
Yeah. Looking for consistency. Does that, other than just the bothersome part, do you let that get to you? If you, off the top of your head, ballparky, do you know roughly how many people voted for you?
I think the election night was 15,500, somewhere
okay.
around
so
there.
So about 10% of the county voted for you.
That's right. But
90%
it's like
didn't.
98% of the people actually showed up to vote.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know which side I would focus on.
Right.
Those that did and the percent, or those that didn't care enough?
Unfortunately, that's the number.
That's, you know, the norm. That,
yeah. Throughout the elections, that's unfortunately what
just
we're seeing.
This is a Papstein weirdness thing. That's not a Fleming thing. She embraces that one pretty hard. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie for 4 years, Fleming.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, any significant changes that you anticipate other than, like, if funding changes and stuff like that, but your plan, the one that you're executing? Yeah, it couldn't have been a four-year plan because nobody has four-year plans.
Right. You know, the first term really was working so, you know, consistently to rebuild the office, get our staffing back up, and then also dealing with a very large backlog. And we've been really working hard on that. I know from the courts, when I first started in January 2015, well over 700 pending trials. We're down now 250 range, which is much more doable. We had...
What's the goal? I mean, in your ideal world, what would you have? Because the pending is when you're doing the research too, right?
Right. The goal is always to try to manage the most serious violent crimes first. Those are also obviously the biggest time. You know, they lock down a courtroom for 2 or 4 months. But also addressing just the day-to-day quality of life. And that's something that we were talking about before that we went on air, but it's a truly difficult issue to address because, as everybody will tell you, whether it be a merchant or those who live in neighborhoods that are subject to a lot of criminal activity, the lower level, the misdemeanants are really just constantly affecting everybody's daily life, whether it be
the ankle nibblers.
Yeah, the ones who go into the stores and are always committing the petty thefts, the people that are vandalizing people's property, those who are just affecting the quality of life. And so that's something that, you know, I work with the courts on. I'm active, you know, on the homeless court. I'm really trying to get us a veterans court because we really need to address some of the problems that we see. But also working with nonprofits and others involved in the system to try to address the chronic people that we see who arrive at the jail and within a couple hours are going to be released because their problem is related to right in that moment. They're high on drugs or alcohol. How can we address that? And so, you know,
going is there a model out there?
Well, one area that a lot of cities have gone back to is sort of more of a non-jail sobering center. And part of the addressing the problem
references a drunk tank in the old days.
Exactly, but providing more services. And right. Granted, a lot of these people are not ready. So you're going to have, you know, maybe the first visit, the second visit, the third visit. But maybe eventually they're going to make that decision of, I really don't want to keep, you know, getting brought in here or possibly arrested and taken to the jail. So I'm going to listen to these people. I'm going to show up. But what we've really seen, and this is historically what we've seen too with the jail, is you have someone who maybe their criminal problems are associated with their drug use. Or perhaps their mental health issues. And then they get released, and we really need to have that case manager, that person who's going to assist them, because now they're expected to show up for an appointment, whether it be for drug treatment or for a mental health appointment. But we really need that follow-through because they're not capable yet of doing that.
Like a counselor, advisor,
right. Social worker, somebody. And I saw this model when I used to handle the public guardian caseload, the conservatorships. It's phenomenal how much you can change someone's life when they have someone who's just consistently there to say, you know, I'll be by tomorrow to pick you up because tomorrow's the day you have your appointment to go see the doctor or to go see your mental health counselor. Or
kind of like a parent.
Yes. And it's just for people, and, you know, a life coach, just somebody who's going to help people follow through. The more we do that, not just the positive effects we as a community will see, but we really are going to see changes for our services. You know, so for a lot of these people, I mean, you talk to ambulance workers. A huge percentage of the calls that they go to are the people who are, you know, laying face down because they've taken too many drugs or have drunk more alcohol than, you know, humanly possible. And the idea is to help reduce that. We're going to reduce 911 calls to law enforcement. We'll reduce our use of paramedics. We'll reduce our services that we're doing out of the emergency room. And we can really be changing not just the individual lives, but the life of our community. And that's where we have to go.
So there's a cultural change.
Yes.
There's a structural change, and then there's the physicalness of it.
Right.
The physical, I don't think anybody is under the assumption that Semper Virens is big enough.
No.
Okay, so how large of a, using my phrase, the holding tank, what size do you need to start this looking at 50 beds or units or whatever the phraseology will be, or 100 or 150 or 10,000? I mean, what scale is that?
One of the issues that we've really got to look at is decentralizing where our services are. So the notion that a sheriff's deputy is going to, you know, pick up this individual to drive to Eureka and in the old days go to the jail, but the future model will not be to take them to the jail and, you know, spend an hour and a half coming and an hour and a half back, and then however much time it takes for them to do their, you know, their work. You're talking about taking someone off the street for 4 hours at a time minimum, and that's crazy. And the same for Willow Creek and Hoopa and Oryx. So the goal would be to have many more sort of, you know, they talk about
neighborhood.
Neighborhood. Yeah. So, and I know that people in the outlying areas are very eager to assist in this. I mean, I've had people talk to me about what can we do to sort of bring back this, let's keep the people here, help them, and then they're going to maybe get better help because we all know them.
KINS News and Information Times, 8:30.
What do we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Maggie Fleming. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, American Ag Credit, and Lolita Cheese. Maggie, the concept of having these regional or decentralized neighborhood, whatever you want to call them, facilities for folks that aren't, they just need pretty much somebody to pay attention to them, you know, the parent thing, seems like it's logical. Seems like it would be embraced, as you were indicating, by these various communities and nonprofits in the communities. Why doesn't it exist already?
I think it's just getting to that point where we realize we've got to address some of these significant issues in a different way. And historically, our jail was not always at capacity. So if you had the chronic drunk, they could be brought to the jail. They could stay there 3 or 4 hours that were, you know, until they were sober enough to be able to be released. And we would not really necessarily see them in the criminal justice system. And now we have people that are arrested or brought in 10, 15, 20 times. I mean, we have officers who document, this is the third time in 2 days I've arrested this person.
So some of it's a compression from the state,
right,
pushing population into the jail.
Right. And okay. and it's also just recognizing, and I can't say this enough, the overlap that I see between drug use, mental health issues, and criminal cases has gone up constantly.
They're almost like hand-holding.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just continuing to climb. We have to address that population.
More events, more individuals, or a higher percentage of the criminal cases are those three brothers holding hands?
All of them, I guess.
Okay.
It's more cases, it's more individuals who have more incidents, and then there are a higher percentage of what we see. We've seen the number, so just to step back for a moment and understand sort of the issue, you can have people who commit a crime who do so completely understanding what they're doing. Okay, so I'm not talking about the not guilty by reason of insanity. I'm talking about the people who commit a crime. Now they're at the jail, and at some point their defense attorney says, Your Honor, I have to declare a doubt. I think my client's incompetent. That person then goes off to NAPA or some other program until they regain competency, meaning they can understand the nature of the proceedings and assist their lawyer through the proceedings. We keep that number, you know, because we've got to do commitment orders, we got to get the reports, we got to get them back to court.
So is that part of that 250 pending cases?
No, we take those off because they are literally, once they're incompetent, it's criminal proceedings are suspended. So they don't count.
Okay.
That, the number of people who are being found incompetent at our jail has more than doubled in a very short period of time. I mean, it's astronomical how quickly we're watching that. That is...
And you have confidence that that's reality based. It's not
some are not
scamming the system.
Yeah, some are not. Some are not. Okay. And we litigate those. But a number of them are. How do you explain that? Right? Why is that now happening when it hasn't happened before? And in part, I think it's just us in this community seeing more individuals who are using drugs and have mental health issues, or are using drugs such that it has affected their mental health, or, you know, started with mental health issues and then started using street drugs. But we see this over and over and over.
Humboldt County specific, regional, statewide, cultural?
I think Humboldt County specific. And I'm going to raise this issue. I shouldn't say that. I know it's a statewide issue because it used to be all of these cases went to one of the state hospitals, Napa, or, you know, some of the other hospitals for other counties. It has become such a huge population that now they have jail-based programs. So Sacramento has one. There's one, I can't remember if it's San Mateo or somewhere in that region, that we can now, we're allowed to send our inmates there because it has to be a locked facility. So I know that it's a statewide issue. I just know that our numbers are dramatically going up.
Do you anticipate that there will be a leveling off or a diminishing of that as we don't have, you know, with the legalization, talking to some of the others in the courthouse, the trimmigrants don't seem to be here nearly the numbers that they were before. Well, if that component is lessened, are we talking about that, or is this meth and some of the other goofy stuff that's out there, or are these people who are now here and they're here?
These are other drugs and then people who are here that have serious mental health issues. So part of, I think, the hope would be if we start, you know, so if someone's in because they've stolen a car and they have mental health or drug abuse, if we are assigning them more this case manager model, such that we're not saying, okay, we're releasing you, good luck on probation, but really following through, that perhaps we're going to lessen the issues in that population. And what we know is that mental health breaks, when that happens, each event can really be a significant, it can hinder the person making the full recovery. So the sooner we're addressing that and helping them not to have those true psychotic breaks, the better off that individual will be for their lifetime. So again, it's really looking at how do we address those problems so that
timely.
The sooner we're on that. And here, you know, here's an issue that we saw with Prop 47 and a lot of the crimes that are the lower level that we see are now misdemeanors. It's really difficult to force those people to receive treatment and help because a misdemeanor really doesn't carry any consequence. So trying to address those, and that's something I reach out to probation to, and I say, here's another misdemeanor. I really need you to formally supervise them because they need a lot more help than they're going to get.
KINS News and Information Times, 8:43.
SoCal just got a whole lot closer. No, we're not talking about some big, scary geological event. It's way cooler and with much less tectonic shifting. Starting in June, flying to LA will be quicker than ever with United Airlines' new nonstop flights from Humboldt County. That's right, no stops between here and there. Ascend, descend, and you're landing, like in just a couple hours. So it's kind of like LA is just down the road a piece. So what are you waiting for? Check it out at flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, the concept of the case manager model, it sounds normal. It can't be easy to implement something like that because it's different.
Right. It's actually, again, I've been working with a very large countywide group on this issue. We've had a number of meetings and broken into smaller groups to try to address what can we do. Number one, you know, it's not just simply funding, it's staffing. And just like, you know, you mentioned Semper Virens, one of the most difficult issues we have is keeping the psychiatrists and other mental health professionals staffed at Semper Virens. That is the same issue we see. So one of the discussions that came up last time is rather than looking at the classic who has a social worker degree and recruiting and hiring them, perhaps we should be looking more at involving peer counselors and perhaps even people who have been through this, people who have experienced...
Alumni.
Yeah, experienced so to speak, life on the street because of drugs, because of alcohol, because of mental health issues, and involving them. So it's just, it's the same problem that I think we see across the board. Staffing, finding qualified people to do these jobs, and then funding those positions. But it's really something we've got to do because the level that we're seeing it just continues to rise.
Is criminal activity on the rise also?
Well, that's an interesting question because what I see is consistently the same number of reports coming. And I'm kind of a person who looks at historical data. I'm trying to figure out what are the trends. So I can say it's been pretty consistent, other than obviously Prop 47 meant we had a lot of crimes that used to be felonies that were now automatically misdemeanors. So those numbers,
if there's an outside event.
Right. We had 300 fewer felony police reports submitted, but we had 300 more. We actually had more than 300 misdemeanors. So I would say crime, let me step back too and say, what I see are the cases that law enforcement believe they have solved. So I only get the reports when there is a suspect who's been identified. With regards to crime in general, I think we see more of the, again, going back to sort of the misdemeanor behavior. That has definitely increased. A lot of the violence, it's still high, but it's the same as it's been now for a couple years.
So perhaps a plateauing?
I would hope soon a decrease, but right now we still have too many homicides, too many robberies, too many crimes of violence associated with sexual assault and domestic violence.
Have we accepted it just as we accepted marijuana for so many years?
No.
So the community is still pushing back. It's just a byproduct of what we've allowed to kind of creep into the local communities.
Right. The one issue that I think we have to continue to really push against is not that we as a community have accepted it, but the smaller community around the actual individual crime has accepted it. It is still very, very difficult, when you have a drug ripoff, even if someone gets shot, to have the people who were in that house that when it occurred come to court and testify. We have victims who in the emergency room say to law enforcement, I'm not going to identify the person, I'm not going to participate, I'm not answering your questions. That is a very difficult process.
That can be in the next 4 years. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Ron.
See everybody tomorrow.